When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Making Waves at Sea Level podcast with your host, Tom Singer. In each episode, we will explore the interesting stories of business executives, entrepreneurs, and industry leaders who are shaking things up and growing their companies. It is time to make some waves. Now here's your host, Tom Singer.
Hey there, and welcome to another episode of Making Waves at Sea Level. I'm your host, Tom Singer, and every week, in fact, twice a week, I bring to this podcast interesting interviews with people who are doing cool things and making waves in business. Now, before I get started with today's episode, I have to thank the first sponsor of today's show. So today's show is brought to you by Stanton Chase International, one of the leading global executive search firms helping trusted advisors to help companies build their senior leadership teams. If your company is looking to grow, you want to make sure that you're talking to Stanton Chase. And I work for Stanton Chase, so you can check us out at stantonchase.com. All right, today's guest on the podcast is Chris Bussing. Now, Chris is somebody who has been in technology sales for a long time. Even though he's quite young, he has been really passionate about working in sales, and he's super passionate about personal growth. And in addition to that, he now helps other people. Through sharing his journey, it helps other people find out how they can exist and thrive in the world of sales. And what he is an expert in is helping people get the meeting. Now, I've been in sales for a long time. Once you have the meeting with the prospect, lots of things can happen. But the hardest part is doing that prospecting. It's making those calls. It's getting people to agree to meet with you. And Chris has had a lot of success along the way in all the companies he's worked at with being able to open up doors. That's why I wanted to bring him to the show, because whether you're in sales or you're the CEO of a company, your salespeople matter a lot. So I wanted to make sure we could learn from what Chris has to share. So Chris, welcome to Making Waves at Sea Level.
Tom, it's so great to be here. And by the way, you have an incredible voice. I bet you do an amazing job on cold calls. Do you have any like cold calling experience? I know you were in the working for a bit, you know, in business. So
yeah, my whole background was sales and sort of a hybrid of marketing and sales in a business development role. So yeah, my whole background was doing this type of work.
Yeah, if I heard that voice, I'd take the meeting right there.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, from everybody that I work with now, trying to get them to hire me. So Chris, give us a little bit of your background. You're not that old of a guy. Let's talk about your sales career.
Yeah, I'll try and make it brief. But I went to Georgetown University, and one Saturday I went to a career fair and I shook hands with a recruiter from Oracle, and that handshake shook up my future career, and I ended up down a path in software sales. How exciting, right? When I was a kid, I didn't grow up thinking I want to be a software salesman. I wanted to be a professional baseball player, but that didn't work out. But software sales has turned out to be the most rewarding career in terms of building a strategic network, making good money to even support other passions, and building great skills with people, et cetera. And so I went off to Oracle, got some great training. I got promoted within a year. And after 1 year, honestly, I started making six figures. So one thing I want people to know is especially for young kids just coming out of college or people in their 20-somethings, like you can make good money if you focus in after a year and get promoted and start making six figures early. Then I ended up working in that promoted role at Oracle for another year, and then took the leap from Boston to Austin to join Google, where millennials are merry. And I had the dream of being a Googler. I got the spinny cap. It was unbelievable. And I did fast track to being a field sales rep at 26. I was one of the youngest folks in the role. There were a couple other folks like me. It's just an unbelievable company. I learned so much. And finally, I took a leap to join a startup and be one of the founding two salespeople, helping grow the United States business for an international tech startup. And hopefully, we're going to go public in the next year or so. So I did, you know, being with a startup, last thing I'll say, it's more like the wild, wild west. So I've gone from the big corporations like Oracle and Google, and now to the startup world. It's been a lot of fun.
So I know at both Oracle and Google, you won awards and were recognized for your ability to get meetings. And that's something, like I said in the introduction, that's really hard for a lot of salespeople. A lot of salespeople are really good at talking about their product or their service and sharing the features and benefits and going in and closing the sale and then helping get the people onboarded. But it's getting those initial appointments that it's what helps. It's what makes a lot of people wash out of sales. They're scared to do it. They're not good at doing it. But you were good at doing it. You got recognized for it. So what are some of the things that you did that got executives to take your call and set those appointments?
Absolutely. And we're talking about executives, right? People above the pay line that make the decisions. So I'm going to tell you the trump card for getting executive meetings and then five key strategies you can implement if you don't have this trump card to put down. The trump card is a warm introduction. No surprise. It is the fastest path to getting a meeting. When I was at Google Cloud, the CEO or former CEO of Citrix, I think he started a new company, said, I only take meetings with people who are introduced to me from a friend or a colleague or someone I respect. I only take warm intros. And so honestly, with executives, they've got a million emails coming from all a bunch of other Chris's and sales execs. The warm intro is the trump card. So if you can build a strategic network, and I know, Tom, you have incredible speaking, or you've spoken about this and you know all about this. One thing I would say is, like, as you're building your sales career, build that network, because you never know when someone is going to come in clutch to make that introduction.
Well, I just want to jump in that this has been said by many people, but the person I heard say it was one of the authors of Chicken Soup for the Soul, Mark Victor Hansen, who was a guest on this podcast just a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things that Mark said was, your network is your net worth. And that has always stuck with me. I heard him say that like 25 years ago.
Absolutely. And that is one of the reasons I would encourage young people to get into sales, is because you flex that muscle of networking and you build such a strategic network that, yes, you can use it as your trump card to get meeting and sales. But what if you want to start your own business? So many CEOs were in sales before, or even like my lawyer at a lawsuit, and hey, that things like that happen. It worked out favorably. He was in sales for 10 years, but you build that network and you can take it with you. And I just want to finish this point on the trump card with a real world story, right? And you'd appreciate this, Tom, given your the speeches you give. But I just got a meeting with a multi-billion dollar business, one of the biggest brands in the world. And you guys would all know it, but I don't think I should share at this point. And the way I did it is I had a connection to a GM of a global business unit through my mom growing up with his wife.
Hey, you know, hey, if your mom is friends with the boss's wife, you know, make the call, take advantage of that. That's awesome.
And so what happened is I leveraged that and also played a mentorship card for young salespeople out there. You're probably intimidated. You're like, oh, you know, these people are way twice my age, could be my parents. They know way more than me. But, you know, you actually might have a strength in having a new perspective you can bring to the market, being fresh. And also you can play, this sounds funny, but like the mentorship card. It's almost like your customers, like, you can bring insights, you need to bring value, but they could almost be a mentor as well. And so I played that card. We had a conversation around mentorship, but I also had prepared my ass off to bring up a specific tailored value proposition relevant to their business. And I shared it. I said, hey, would you be like, I basically wanted to see if he would be the decision maker. And although he oversees all these technology teams, he said, this guy is the global CTO and you need to talk to him. He doesn't respond to my emails, but I can send a warm email that you write over and maybe we'll get back. Now, I worked with my president of my company, spent a lot of time coming with a great email, and we got the meeting. I got his attention miraculously. But just an example of the ultimate trump card in action is warm intros. And sometimes it could come from your mom knowing the GM's wife.
So, okay, so that's the first one. You said there were five. The warm intro is a great way to go.
If you don't have a warm intro, here's five tips, and it's all tied to personalization. How can you make something go from cold to warm? And how can you personalize your outreach? So the first thing is relate like a rock star, right? Psychology says, and I saw a study, and unfortunately, I don't remember the specific study, but it found that people who are reading about strangers and see that they have something in common it had such a bigger impact on their liking of that individual versus if they were talking or met them in person. So what, how that ties to sales is in an email, if you can call out some type of personal ties, like you see on their Twitter or LinkedIn, they like Stoic philosophy. They got a corgi, like, or something like that, right? And sometimes it's a little bit of a stretch, but can you find a personal tie or synergy and call it out? And if you call it out in an email, you're strangers, but it has a big impact on the how likable you come across, and people buy from people they like. So relate like a rock star. Go on LinkedIn, go on Twitter, Facebook, get creative and find commonalities. There's personal ties, and the other thing is organizational ties. When I worked at Google, I used to Google search XYZ company in Google. And then because it's such a big company, so everyone doesn't have this benefit if they're at a smaller startup, I would find like there was some outside the box partnership or synergy with Google and this company. Or maybe we had a similar values when you look on their website and see their company values and their mission, and you can call it out. So there could be an organizational synergy as well as a personal. So that's number one, relate like a rock star. Number two, channel your inner hostage negotiator. You know, Chris Voss, have you heard of Chris Voss? He's the sure. top hostage negotiator in the world. He talks about building credibility and trust, and a sales and business relationship is founded on that. And the way you do that is showing empathy up front. So do your detective work and channel your inner hostage negotiator to find what are the problems and opportunities in this person's industry. What are the trends? What will the CEO care about? What does a CEO care about? Are they trying to drive revenue for the company? Of course, right? How are they build certain partnerships? But put yourself in their shoes, understand their market, understand similar problems solved by similar companies, and show that empathy and credibility up front, that you understand them and where they're at. There was one time that I sent an email to a CEO, and I did the relating like a rock star. I said, Hoya Saxa from Google. We went to Georgetown. That was the joke. So that's the first thing. Second thing, I read their 10K and I called out the greatest fears of the CFO, which are in the 10K. And I tied in how Google helped address this. He called me back. So there's the first two in action.
Well, and I want to jump in because I had a situation happen to me. I was up to be the keynote speaker at a technology organization. And yes. The CEO didn't think I was the right fit. I didn't have a background working for Oracle or Google or something like that. But his meeting planner knew that my message about how we could get people to connect more was really important to their clients who were going to be attending the event and to their sales team who were going to be present also. So she really thought I was the right person. So I looked him up. I did a little homework on him beforehand, right? And I found out that he had gone to Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. So when we got on the phone call, and this was just a phone call, it wasn't Zoom. He and his meeting planner were in a room on a speakerphone. I was somewhere else, and I told them when I got on the phone, I said, "Hey, I saw on LinkedIn that you went to Carnegie Mellon," and he got so excited. He thought that I had gone there, and he started That's talking. Like yeah, he said, "He goes, did you go to Carnegie Mellon?" And I said, "No, all my money does." Because at the time, my daughter was a senior at Carnegie Mellon, and he laughed at that joke, and he proceeded to get like really excited and feel real connected because I knew all about Pittsburgh. I knew his favorite restaurant, and he ended up at the end of the conversation telling his meeting planner, send him a contract. We never even talked about the actual presentation, but because I was able to relate to him and have something in common, boom, I was able to get that piece of business. So give us your last three tips then.
Smooth operator. And yeah, if you can understand like their alma mater, I know some people that went to certain universities, they're so big on the football or their city where they grew up. That's huge too. Okay. The final three, number three, give to get, right? The law of reciprocity, you give something and people are more likely to respond and even feel like they owe you something, but it's not manipulative. It's just authentically giving without it expecting anything in return. But ideally, something will come back to you. How do you give to an executive? You offer an idea and an insight on their market, something they didn't think about that could help shape their future thinking and the growth of their business. Now, this is a big, big thing that the Challenger sales methodology talks about, which is the methodology adopted by Google and the most innovative companies. I believe CEB created it. It's the top reps are not... granted, they said the top reps aren't relationship folks. Now, I'm big on relationships, but I think they were mostly saying focus on challenging and offering new ideas. So give a new idea. Another thing is give an experience, right? Can you before the pandemic happened, in theory, I was going to be doing Formula One racing, Bon Jovi concerts, March Madness with customers. You create an experiential recognition with your brand. That's huge. Now, in the pandemic world, when things are virtual, maybe it's a virtual wine tasting. And that brings me into the final way you give, which is giving an opportunity to network. Executives want the chance to meet other executives and build their network, which can lead to growth and new ideas. Wrapping it up, 4 and 5 should be pretty quick. Number 4 is throw in some special sauce, right? And the special sauce is basically being different and being human, showing your humanity. It's something called pattern interrupt. You know, you can't be perceived as better if you're not perceived as different. When I reached out to Sir LaTaba, the CEO, I sent him a message of how my mom bought me a cooking class at Sir LaTaba, and I ended up going, and I didn't want to, but went. I was like the only dude, but I had the best time. And I called it out there, and it got his attention. I was human, right? And that made all the difference. And so the final thing is always be closing. You got to make an ask. Now, sometimes the way I do it is this. If any of this sounds remotely interesting, do you have 20 minutes? And I make the commitment level lower, right? Like 20 minutes isn't as bad as 30, right? Because they don't owe you anything. They're a stranger at this point. To talk about how we could build a partnership. I love using certain language like partnership, or maybe use words from their LinkedIn where they're talking about initiatives, like where we could support XYZ initiative, and make the ask, right? So those are my 5 things and the trump card.
So those are all great. And you're right. That trump card is the best way to go. But if you can take those cold calls and make them warm, it's going to go a long way. So, Chris, I've got more questions for you. But first, I have to thank the other sponsor of this episode. So this episode, like all of them, is brought to you by Podfly Productions. Podfly takes the time and the headache out of creating your own podcast. They set you up with the right equipment, training, and guidance to ensure you're going to sound amazing. Podfly does all the heavy lifting and that pesky technical work so that you can focus on creating great content, growing your audience, and interviewing people who are making waves in business like Chris Bussing. Hey, if you want to start a podcast, and I know that some of you want to start your own podcast, jump over to podfly.net/coolthings and check out the offer that they have for the listeners of this podcast. So, Chris, as we look at this whole idea of getting the meeting, what is it that you do so well when it comes to cold calling?
Yeah, I'll just walk you through what a cold call could look like. You know, hey, this is Chris calling from Sexy Solutions. Let's go with that. And before I go any further, I realize I'm calling you completely out of the blue. Do you have 30 seconds for me to tell you why I'm calling? Or you could say the same thing another way. Hey, this is Chris calling from XYZ company. I realize I'm calling you completely out of the blue. So before I go any further, do you have 30 seconds for me to tell you why I'm calling? And then you can decide if it makes sense to talk further, right? People, executives especially, are internal oriented. They want to be in control and make the decisions. And so if you give them the power to say yes or no, that's great. If you show a degree of social awareness, that goes such a long way. And what I mean by that is you're aware I am interrupting your day and you're busy. And so instead of being a telemarketer that just jumps and says, blah, 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 I'm calling about this and this, like you stop and say, hey, I recognize I'm interrupting your day. I want to be respectful of your time and respectful of how busy you are. And you basically ask for the permission to share why you're calling to see if it makes sense to talk. Now, if they might say, I'm too busy. I had an executive tell me that, or the head of a VC firm the other day. And then what you do is you go roll with it and say, hey, is there a better time to call you back? And they'll tell you. Or in that case, he said, hey, work with this person. He delegated to someone else. I ended up getting the meeting that way. So that's the first thing. You know, social awareness, diffuse the sales defenses that go up from a psychology perspective and ask for permission. From there, what I like to do, one way you could skin a cat is offering a story. So I'd love to tell you a quick story on a similar company that we helped. We were working with XYZ company and they were facing this challenge. We helped them solve it and produce this result. So maybe it's up to you to understand specifically customer stories. That's huge. As well as the specific outcomes that you produce. And ideally, if numbers are tied to it, like certain numbers, savings, That's great. So we helped XYZ company in your industry. That's even better because companies want to do what their peers are doing in their industry. We helped them achieve this result. If any of this even sounds remotely interesting, so you have 20 minutes to have a conversation sometime next week, right? And again, the 20 minutes is lowering the investment level. You could ask for 15, get the meeting, and then in the meeting, you do a great job and you're approaching the time mark and you see you're respectful of their time. And again, they appreciate this so much. Oh, by the way, I see we're coming up on time. Do you have 5 or 10 more minutes to keep the conversation flowing and going? I wouldn't actually say that. And they say, yeah. And then you get the full 30, but at least to hook them, lower that investment level. One other thing I want to say is you might throw in there, at the least, you're going to come away with some new ideas on your market and a better understanding of what other peers are doing that will impact future decisions, even if there isn't a fit. So one, helping them understand it's okay to say no. And two, at the least, you'll get some ideas. So there's, even if there isn't a fit, there's a reason to talk.
So I have a question. What do you do when you get somebody on the phone and you go through these great things that you've just shared and the person's kind of a jerk about it? What do you do when the person is, you know, not interested in talking to you and just isn't nice?
I had one time I did get like angry. At the end of the day, you do have to have some degree of self-respect. And some of the best reps I even knew at Google, like one time when this was a discovery call, so a call that was set up. He flat out said, I don't know if I want to work with someone like you. I don't know if he used that exact language, but basically what he said. And then the guy like literally respected it, the CEO, and like started to be more, behave in the way that fit what my friend, the Google rep, was looking for. So I think, you know, in life, you know, like they say, a little philosophical, but givers end up on the top and the bottom of the food chain. But it's the givers who are generous and kind, but then also put people in their place when they're jerks who end up at the top. So I think that's key. Do you have any thoughts on a specific example, like of what someone might say? Like,
no, I've just found sometimes when you call people, they're like, I'm not interested. And they, you know, they hang up on you. Maybe what do you do in that case?
You could call them back, but maybe that's your ego talking. I think there's power in letting go and realizing there are many fish in the sea. Let's move on to the next one, like Jay-Z. So, you know, I think you got to let it go. You know, you can't force a square peg into a round hole. Yeah. Well, and one other thing on the cold calling, by the way, is you could do the ask for permission, but for those of you out there who are confident and bold and brash, lead with context. Hey, you know, this is Chris. We work with the Vertex portfolio, other portfolio companies to help achieve these results. I thought it probably makes sense to talk about where we could partner together. You could go that route, right? You are actually working with a venture capital firm that supports other startups. Or, hey, I saw on LinkedIn, you know, this executive and we helped their company achieve these results. And I thought it would make sense to have a conversation with you guys. You can take that type of approach, but lead with some type of context, making it warm as to why that you should be talking. And the final piece is, you know, it's helpful to go in with a mindset of like expecting the positive outcome and then dealing with rejection if it comes and accepting it. But like, even when you go up to a stranger, an attractive stranger, like you envision the best, right? And you also envision that like, I belong in this conversation. We should be talking. I believe we can bring value. And so coming from that place too, you're more confident and it's a little more conversational.
So when I got into sales 30 years ago, they said, look, sales is a numbers game. Would you say it's still a numbers game?
Absolutely. It's just over time you can learn to work smarter. Again, by using your trump card to get those warm intros, spending 5 minutes to research to make outreach more personalized, especially if you know it's an account worth talking to. You got to talk to companies and spend your time on accounts that you know are high potential. At Google Cloud, we had certain calculations based on their funding levels, based on their revenue, and maybe we had ways to find out their IT budget that this company, and based on their industry too, is worth talking to. They probably spend millions on the cloud. They're worth doing the research and personalizing. Otherwise, like, what if you're getting rejected by a company that can't even buy anyways? And maybe they're just like, or you're talking to someone who isn't even a decision maker. Don't take it personal, you know, but focus on the right account and do 5 minutes of research, to get maybe five nuggets to personalize that you can use, and then spend 5 minutes writing that email or coming up with that cold call script.
So Chris, I know one thing you believe in is mindset and why it's so important. So why does having the right mindset matter for salespeople, and how do you take that mindset into your whole life?
Absolutely. Mindset is the foundation. You know, without confidence in yourself and in the product, without a willingness to be courageously face rejection and face failure, you know, you can't succeed in sales, and it's hard to succeed in life. Right. And so that's one of the things that I love about sales, is it's taught me to embrace rejection. Sometimes rejection is God's protection. It points you in a new direction. Right. To embrace failure, as failure is really just a learning opportunity to get better and iterate to greatness. And, one of the things I've learned, this is the mindset I was thinking before this interview, I had to tell you, is that, you're always laying the groundwork and everything matters. Success is about grit and pushing through and showing up and showing up and showing up. And eventually your preparation will meet opportunity, and what is perceived by others as overnight success will come to you. You know, and I could tell you a few anecdotes. When I started my sales career at Oracle, my first year, I reached out to a guy for 9 months and no response. And finally, in Q4, he reached out to me. Every email that had no response mattered. He knew Chris Bussing was his guy. I ended up closing a deal in a role where I wasn't responsible to close revenue, and used that as a way in Q4 to bring value to my team and get a promotion. That was transformative, and that set me down the path of not just getting promoted at Oracle, but it put me in the position to get to Google, which put me in the position to get to this new startup. Everything is laying the groundwork for the future and is the stepping stone. And then what if I thought to myself, oh, these emails, this guy, he hasn't responded for 9 months, they don't matter. You know, and I just didn't take action. Like that would, then I would have never had this unbelievable exponential ripple effect from that closed deal. So lay the groundwork and keep showing up. Everything you're doing matters.
So mindset, though, is a term that gets bantered around a lot in today's society. What does it even mean? Come on, give us a little bit more about what is a good mindset. What's the mindset a salesperson has to have?
Well, a mindset is like a lens through which you view yourself and the world. And one of the biggest themes in my life, and we talked about it, Tom, is learning to harness the superpower to choose to see problems as opportunities, right? And so that's an example of a mindset. I've had times in my life, I talked with you, and I realized I'm a privileged guy. I've had some problems. I've had some serious health issues, even life-threatening health issues. That problem turned into an opportunity, actually. I grew from it. I had a time where I left a job prematurely from Oracle to Google and hit a hiring freeze. And I was unemployed for 6 months, but that problem turned into an opportunity. I did get the job, and it's what started my YouTube channel, Pursuit of Possibility. And so in sales, like, and in life, if you can see your problems as opportunities and not immovable roadblocks, that's a growth mindset. And that, yeah, that's an example of mindset. And that is the type of mindset that will lead to success. It will be inevitable for you over the long run.
So you mentioned your YouTube channel. You have a YouTube channel called The Pursuit of Possibilities, and you're about to launch a new YouTube channel that is all about sales tips to help salespeople, you know, be more effective, get more meetings, have that right mindset, et cetera. What's that YouTube channel going to be called, and how will people find it? I know it won't launch for a week or two after we do this interview, but this lives evergreen. So how can people find it?
Absolutely. I'm really excited about this new channel. It's Chris Bussing, and it's my name, you know, owning my name and the brand. And I realized my expertise in sales, and sales has done so much for me in terms of enabling a wonderful lifestyle. Again, developing great skills that I can take with me wherever I go that help me in dating, or if I want to start a new business, and just building a great network and learning to, you know, adopt these mindsets that are so helpful for personal growth, right? So I want to give people access to those opportunities, at least the opportunities that come with being successful in sales, maybe breaking into tech sales if you feel like you've been in a dead-end job and you want to remove your limitations on your earning potential. So definitely a big part of the channel is going to be being successful in sales, right? My tagline is going to be sell more, live more. And so the live more piece is also going to hit on things like personal growth experiments. I tried Mark Cuban's morning routine, and this is what happened. I didn't drink for 6 months and this is what happened. Well, I'm currently in month two and I actually have had a lot of breakthroughs. I did the Wim Hof breathing technique for this many days, this would happen. Another video, final one I'll say on personal growth experiments is I did a gratitude journal for 3 years and it had a big impact. This is what happened. I'm going to do a video on that. And finally, happiness hacks that are rooted in psychology and neuroscience. I'm no psychology or neuroscience expert, but I geek out on that stuff and I've read about it my whole life. And in fact, sales is what kind of got me into it. So sharing learnings around that too, on how to, you know, improve your mental health and find more joy in life. So it's going to come out, I think, Tom, like I'm shooting for next week, actually, and I'm going to launch about 3 videos at once. I am so excited. So anyone who wants to check it out, and then leave a comment with your nuggets because y'all are smart people with great ideas. So
Chris, what is one last piece of advice that you think salespeople need to know?
Oh, man. Okay. It came to me. The common denominator of success. The greatest piece of sales literature ever written, arguably, by Albert Ian Gray, talks about this common denominator. And it's this: making a habit of doing the uncomfortable things that failures aren't willing to do. So schedule the painful things first and do them consistently. Make those cold calls first. You probably feel something in your stomach. You're anxious. You don't want to do it. You're afraid to call a stranger who's probably going to reject you. Well, do it anyways. Do those uncomfortable things. You probably don't want to do a little extra research to create a beautiful personalized outreach, but it's going to be more likely to get the meeting. Do it. Put in the extra legwork up front. All right. So make a habit of doing the uncomfortable things that failures aren't willing to do.
Nice. Well, Chris Bussing, thank you for being a guest on Making Waves at Sea Level. Good luck with your new YouTube channel. Everybody go find that. It's just under his name, Chris Bussing, just like it is sounding, B-U-S-S-I-N-G. And check out everything else that he has to offer on his other YouTube channel. Now, here's the other thing I'd like you to do. If you're watching this on YouTube on the video version, or if you're listening on Apple or Spotify, do me a favor. Jump over to wherever you get your podcasts and do that positive review for the show. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to subscribe to the channel. But more importantly, go and tell a friend about the show, Making Waves at Sea Level. I started the show 7 years ago, nearly 700 episodes, specifically so that I could share really cool people who are doing things to make waves in business. And we're not stopping anytime soon. But every time I meet somebody and I say, how did you find my little podcast? They say word of mouth. It was their mother, their brother, their boss, one of their friends who said, hey, you're into business. You should check out this show. There's some really unique interviews. So please go out there and tell your friends and be back in a couple of days for another interview with somebody just as cool as Chris Bussing. Now, in the meantime, go out there, flex your business muscles. Make sure your career ladder is against the correct wall because there's nothing worse than climbing a career ladder and finding out you're in the wrong place, because I did that. I know firsthand. And then while you're out there doing all this stuff, don't forget to have some fun along the way. Go out there and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Making Waves at Sea Level podcast. Without your listening to these in-depth conversations, there would be no show. Connect with Tom at tomsinger.com and follow him on Twitter and Instagram at tomsinger.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.